Wait, hold on a second. Are you the alien, or are you talking to the aliens?
I think I'm talking to the aliens.
Okay.
Because all the aliens are all gangly. I don't want to be that. Hey, kids. Happy Tuesday. If it's Tuesday where you are, could be Wednesday where you are.
And we're going to start with that again.
You know, yeah, we're going to start with that. I don't know where you are. I don't know when you are. I don't know where I am most of the time. If I don't see it on my little pill box, I have no idea where I'm at. So it's on taking pictures. And 149.
Nine.
Is there any significance
times.
To 49?
The California Gold Rush.
Was that in 1849?
Yes, it was. The 49ers.
Huh.
Did I just blow your mind?
Is that really what that's from?
Yeah.
Huh.
Not that I mean, there is a team, some team of some sport called the 49ers. Is that football? Football, right?
Football. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where that comes from?
Yeah.
Oh.
See, I just put it all together for you.
Huh.
Yep.
Okay. So, that's really cool.
I love that stuff.
Oh, Bill. So my name is Jeffrey Sidoris, and with me, the historically accurate Bill Wadman.
I like that one. That was good. How are you, Jeffrey?
I'm better. I'm better. I'm
okay.
Better.
Wait, have you come to some conclusion?
Okay, so last week, can we start with a little bit of recap?
Sure. Follow
last, up. A little follow up. First of all, I don't think that I have received as much feedback or commentary or notes, emails on any other episode. So
even the Come to Jesus episode.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
So for those of you who took the time to write in, thank you. It means more than you can possibly know. So thank you. One of the emails came from Fiddler Extraordinaire and friend of the show, Todd Reynolds.
Yes. Yeah. I read that one.
And I'd like to start with that, because I think that leads into some of the stuff that I've been working on over the past little while. Okay. So one of the things that Todd wrote in his email is the idea, I think there's a misunderstanding there, Todd. The idea of art being defined only by someone else, someone qualified, is so problematic on so many levels that I don't have time to write that particular email. I don't believe that I have ever said that it's defined by somebody who's qualified. In fact, the whole idea of qualification to say what is or isn't art is something that I find problematic. I think that's one of the big problems, that it's the establishment says what is or what is not art. I think what is or is not art is a personal assessment independent of any sort of qualification.
Okay, so why can't that assessment be made by the artist?
Well, I think that gets into what Todd, a light went off when I read this thing. Todd writes, I call myself an artist not because I'm so arrogant as to be willing to assess my own work as something great, but rather because I'm engaged in the practice of making art. And that sentence, Todd, my head just went, and sorry for the plosive if that happened. This is something that has been at the core of my struggle, is the idea of artist, big A versus artist little A. Because I think one is preoccupied is the wrong word, but one denotes product, the end product.
Okay.
And the other denotes the process. And that's where I'm at.
Okay, but
go ahead.
Well, okay, so in your head, capital A is product, lowercase a is process. And therefore, if Todd calls himself lowercase a artist, you're okay with that because he's talking about process.
Okay.
Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
I don't care what Todd calls himself. This is all relevant or relative to me.
Okay.
If
someone I was
else
using
wants
him as
to
an
call
example.
Themselves
sure.
large, you know, capital artist, I don't care. This is all my own struggle because that's all I'm responsible for.
Okay. Yeah. I was just using him as an example of what you were saying. But
and,
okay.
Yeah. And so the where this all has come from, and this has been a week of thinking about it, and starting to talk to someone else about it, which mm-hmm. is probably something that I've needed to do for a long time. And what's part of what's been uncovered is around fear.
Sure.
And there are several things going on. And it's I have been operating under the assumption that the fear has been of failure.
Okay.
And I don't think that's correct, or I'm starting to believe that that's not correct. It's not so much the fear of failure. I think I've been using that as a substitute for a belief that I don't deserve the happiness that comes along with success, or the happiness that comes along with doing what I love.
Okay.
Because the reality of it is that I've never failed at anything, ever. There are things that didn't turn out the way I wanted them to, but everything that I have, quote, failed at, if there has been anything, I've learned from. Okay.
I think so, failure as an absolute in life is as much a fantasy as success is, capital S.
Yes. Yes.
Everything is somewhere in the middle.
So my fear of failure is more a fear of committing to a path. It's a fear of making choices and committing to a path or a trajectory for fear that I may not be able to change that path or trajectory.
Okay. Yes.
Right?
Sure.
And a lot of this is it's a fear of being stuck.
Yeah.
And that in being stuck, we've kind of uncovered that I kind of waffle between sad and angry and apathetic.
Yes.
There's kind of a sine
wave.
Those
are your three states. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a kind of a sine wave. And at the top of the sine wave is sad, angry. And at the bottom of the sine wave is apathetic. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, there's a spike that breaks through to good. But good takes an extraordinary amount of energy.
Right.
So where did all of this come from? And that's been kind of the crux of all this is where does it come from? And why am I so reluctant to self-identify as an artist? Why is that something that I just can't wrap my head around? And part of it is the person that I tried to please most, my father.
Yeah.
To him, art had no value. Artists had no value. And I was told this my whole life, that artists are a dime a dozen. They don't contribute. They're, you know, what are you going to do? Blah, blah, blah. All this negativity surrounding it. So there's no way that I'm going to self-identify as something that he finds worthless.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And despite the fact that I have been a maker of things for a lot of years. I mean, since I was a kid. And the irony of it is that the last probably decade of his life, he self-identified as a metal artist because that's all he did. He made stuff out of metal out in the desert.
Yeah. What the funny thing is, and I think you and I have this in common, is that you probably were interested in and pushed towards art and making stuff in some ways because you identified with bits and pieces of what your father was, and in other ways as a rebellion against what he was trying to define you as. And somehow in that whole milieu, you end up having a hard time saying you're an artist. Ultimately, it's because you're worried about his opinion of you as an artist when the whole point of you being in art in the first place was to get away from his opinion.
Yeah.
I have the same exact situation. And the flip side is when you were talking about fear of taking a path, right? Like fear of defining something that you'd get stuck on. I mean, sometimes I also get the feeling like, let's say tomorrow I wanted to become a screenwriter, right? Let's say just something I'm not, right? And I said, I'm a screenwriter and I did screenwriting for 5 years. And at that point I decided I didn't really like screenwriting anymore. I'm going to go do something else. The fear that other people would be like, wait a minute, you just said your whole life was about screenwriting.
Right.
And now it's about something else. Why should I believe anything you say? You know, there's sort of a fear of losing your honor. bad word. But you understand what I'm trying to say. Losing your credibility, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, and the end result of that is decades of my life have been built around guilt.
Yeah.
Sure. Decades of my life have been built around false assumptions and trying to please someone who I come to find out ultimately was pleased with me beyond measure in whatever that I did, whatever endeavor, you know. He never told me any of that, but I come to find out that, you know, whatever I did, everybody knew about it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, you know, the time has come now, though. And I wrote this in this blog post where I deserve to write this new chapter in my life where the dominant emotion is not guilt.
Yep.
You know, and this extends into how I react emotionally and you know, creatively, I'm not afraid to not know the outcome of a particular piece of work. So if I'm working on a paint, there are several paintings that I've done that I've had to do them 3 or 4 or 5 times to get it where I want it. But emotionally, if I don't know an outcome, I don't engage. I have to know where this is going to end up before I'm willing to.
The problem is life doesn't work that way.
Well, yeah, and it's only taken me 47 years to start to figure that out. but the idea of the fear of success not really being about fear, but being about feeling like I don't deserve the joy that comes with it is a powerful uncovering.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, not to minimize or belittle it. Todd, thank you for taking the time to write that. That one sentence began me thinking about a new way to engage with the world and help me to sort of realize that I needed to talk to somebody else about this.
Yeah.
That I needed to get a different perspective on who I am and how I make my way through the world. And to everyone else, as I said before, thank you. You know, I don't know where this is going to go, but I feel like I've uncovered some things that I haven't uncovered before. And a lot of it, I'm not going to go into a lot of it here, but, you know, there's stuff around expectations and disproportional response and how I respond to people. If they don't do things the way I would do them or think they should be done, what is, you know, there's all sorts of, there's a lot more work to do.
It's what's interesting is that a lot of these, and I don't want to use the word defense mechanisms because it's, that's loaded in a way that I don't mean it to be and not quite what I'm trying to say. But I think we all build these sort of automatic responses to whatever, criticism, belief, the people doing things we wouldn't do, other people's success, whatever, all these things, all the things we talk about on the show.
Sure.
But all of those things are, they are just layers over the top that are obfuscating what is the reality. And the reality is always just doing the work, right? All of that stuff, what other people think, what other people are doing, what you think about that, all of that stuff is ethereal and a little bit of a ghost. You know,
yeah,
it feels real, but ultimately it's, you know, it's not a ghost in Ghostbusters where it's going to slime you. It's, you know, it's the ghost at the beginning that goes right through you. You know what I mean? You know, I don't know. It comes down to what works for you. You know, maybe that works for you, you know, obviously what you've been doing for the past X years has not been working for you. And that's where it goes, right? And
well, it's been working, but it's been working to yield an unhealthy end product.
Yes, yeah. It's been working in a way that is really inefficient. You're burning gas in the wrong way.
Yeah,
yeah.
And trying to figure out where I get fuel from, how to expend it,
yeah,
how long I have to expend it, you know, this is the work that I need to do.
Yeah.
And you know, there are people that have written in that are in a similar spot. Lauren has written in a few times, and I'm not going to put you on the spot, Lauren, but keep writing in. You know, let's work on this together, you know. And anyone else who's writing in, you know, I think that speaking for myself, I've got this. Has been my mantra. I got this. You know, I can handle this. I can handle whatever shit life throws at me. But guess what, kids? I can't.
Yeah.
I've been trying to handle it for the bulk of my adult life, and I'm a mess.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, I can function, sure. But as far as being what someone would call emotionally healthy... No. And I'm willing to let go. I'm willing to let go of the idea that I can do this myself. And, you know, I threw it out there. Maybe we need to have, you know, a support group of some sort for one another that we just sit and talk for a month, you know, every month, you know, once a month or something and kind of bounce things off of each other. Because the problem with all of this is – and I don't know how it is in other countries. Maybe it's, you know, this idea of American independence where everybody's got to figure it out for themselves. I don't know. But I know that I don't have the tools to figure it out myself.
Yeah,
I just don't, you know?
I mean, look, you know, you and I talk about the art versus artist and product versus progress and all these things. And they're interesting discussions and they get us into places that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise. The question is, at what point does that all become a distraction from the whole purpose of all of this, which is to actually live your life? You know?
Well, yes. But living my life, part of that is living honestly and not hiding behind the things that I've been hiding behind.
Yes, so, I guess, okay, finish your thought. Then I'll finish
well, that. I was just going to say, so am I willing to accept that the way I define artist, I'm willing to self-identify as that? Yes. Yeah,
right.
So I can let go of some of the false reality that I've surrounded myself with and go, I'm an artist, not because what I make is art. That's not for me to decide. I haven't changed my mind on that. But the process of my life, that's art.
Yes. But then that's true of everyone everywhere all the time.
Sure. Why
yeah.
not?
Yeah, sure.
And who am I to say different?
Well, that's sort of been more my position in all of this, yeah. You know? Is that it's up to each of us. The only sort of warning sign that I ever see with these discussions is not to replace the battle in your own head with the discussion of the battle of your own head. And then it just becomes a meta thing where ultimately all of this has to lead to actually doing the stuff right for everyone.
Sure. And I have a here. Can you hear this? Can you hear this?
Is that pages of notebooks?
This is pages of my emotional notebook, my emotional journal that I keep. And I've started to keep after every session, after every discussion. Sure. And there's a part about tools. So what are you going to do? Yep. You know, how are you? Yes, it's great to talk about all this, but how does it manifest? And I'm not going to go through all of them with you because they're personal to me, but one of the big ones is to pay attention to my own emotional pain. Pay attention to my own angst, my own level of angst, and try to stave that off before I get into one of those sad, angry depression spirals.
Yep, sure.
And if it's doing a 10-minute yoga session, that's what it is. If it's taking a walk, if it's taking a shower, if it's keeping a little book of crossword puzzles or Sudoku so that I have to focus on something else,
yep,
that releases me from that which was confounding me, then that's what I need to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going to work. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's taking St. John's wort or 5-HTP to sort of help even me out a little bit. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's something more.
For Conrad, it's playing Tetris on level 16.
Okay, maybe it's that. But it's something. It has to be something that takes my mind out of it. When I do yoga in the morning, I suck so bad at doing yoga that I have to concentrate like you wouldn't believe. I can't just like go through, I can't watch TV and do yoga. I have to like concentrate so hard, and I still am ridiculously poor form, but that helps me because it takes me out of what I thought was so important to get all spun up about in the first place.
Sure. Yeah. I do the gym for that for me.
Yeah. Well, and I ride my bike. I mean, yeah. There are very few things in my life that I enjoy as much as riding my bicycle. And it can be, you know, a couple miles or it can be 20 miles. It doesn't, whatever it is, I get the same charge out of it. But the important thing is if you, and we'll wrap this up, but you got to find what works for you.
Yep.
And what has started to work for me is to acknowledge where some of this stuff has come from and to actually make steps to identify when things happen. And it's, you know, how much sleep am I getting? Because I don't get enough sleep. It's, you know, what kind of things am I eating? What am I watching? What am I listening to? And how do these things react together? How do they play off of each other? And ultimately, it's going to take me a little bit of time to form some new patterns, to form some new reactions, to form some new responses.
Yeah, all true.
So thank you for indulging me on this.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
It'll be exciting to see what comes out of it.
I hope so, because it's exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. I look, you know, I think about all this stuff probably almost as much as you do. Lately I've been trying to just sort of let it go. You know, it's like I said in an email to Lauren yesterday, I said, you know, there's nothing we're talking about is really life or death. It just feels like it is, you know.
But I don't agree with that, because these things lead to life or death. These things lead to depression. I mean,
no, they absolutely do. But I'm just saying, what I'm saying is that if you confront them, the reality of what they are is not as terrifying as what we make them out to be in our own minds.
Maybe.
In the same way that, you know, it's like, you know, I had a weird thing about dentists, right? Like I had a weird dental phobia a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now to the point where I had to take Xanax to go get a cleaning, you know, like that kind of stress.
Sure.
And now I've gotten to the point where I, you know, if I have to get a little filling done, it's not a big deal.
Right.
Because in my mind, what the dentist was and what that pain was and what that whole process was, the reality of it is almost never what we think it is. And that's an actual physical thing with physical pain.
Sure.
The emotional stuff, it's like they really are ghosts. You know, it's like they're scary and they're haunting and they can push you down. But like if you just say, F it, and I'm going to run through them, there's nothing they can do to stop you. It's all about just getting up the mental thing to try to confront them. You know?
Well, I respectfully disagree, because it has paralyzed me.
Absolutely. It's paralyzed me for, you know, 35 years.
Yeah. It's been very real to the point where, you know,
it's real in the sense that it has real consequences. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like there's somebody actually physically pushing you down. In some ways it's yourself pushing you down.
Right. But that, for me, that's even worse.
Yeah.
My self-imposed set of beliefs have been the things that have led me to think about things that I shouldn't think about.
Yeah.
Nothing that anyone else has done. Right. Just me.
Yeah.
So anyway, hey, what? So much for a light Tuesday.
We can actually talk about some light Tuesday. Can we talk about Van Halen?
We can always talk about Van Halen.
You love Diamond Dave.
No.
No, either do I.
No.
There's probably 1,000 people right now going, you don't like David Lee Roth?
You know what? I think Sammy and Dave both made fantastic records with Van Halen.
Right. I agree.
My personal favorite record, and I think we both agree on this, my favorite Van Halen record is 5150, same as you.
Yeah, I know.
I like Jamie's Crying. I like Running with the Devil.
Sure.
You know, I like Eruption. Look, was there great music? Yeah. But for me, that collection of songs on 5150, that's what did it for me.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I never had a problem with Sammy. So what we're talking about, there's this Medium article I'm going to put in the show notes about them shooting the cover originally of Women and Children First, which is what, their third record?
Third or fourth. Yeah, okay. I think it was a third.
And how David Lee Roth really desperately wanted to have Helmut Newton come shoot their album cover. But really, he was trying to swing it so that it was, you know, a big picture of him, because, you know, Dave was a whore.
Was?
Is. Will always be. Anyway, this article is really fascinating about, like, the process of shooting with Helmut Newton and how the band all came over and they took some pictures of the band members, but mostly it was about Roth and how it didn't work out. And they didn't end up using any of these pictures except for one of them.
And the band didn't know who Helmut Newton was.
Yeah. They had no idea who he was, you know? And so the record company was so disappointed by this whole thing. They ended up going and shooting with Norman Seeff, I think is how you pronounce his name.
Yep. Norman Seeff.
In the studio, and those are the shots that are on the back cover and like on the album cover. which are very classic sort of rock and roll, not at all the sort of fashion-y kind of pictures that Helmet would have taken, the dramatic fashion pictures that Helmet would have taken.
I love the photograph on the cover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where, you know, Eddie's
Eddie all swung back, yeah.
Yeah, swung back, and Michael Anthony's holding him up, and it's just, it's a great shot.
Right. And so the reason I brought this up is it's a great example of how a fantastic photographer and a particular job or subject does not guarantee great results. You know, that that there is a chemistry here that happens or doesn't happen. And I have talked to a number of photographers and they've told me stories of people they've worked with or celebrities they've worked with who were nightmares in one way or the other. Like, it just, they just didn't mesh. The way they saw the world and the way the subject saw the world in a portrait session were two completely different things. And yet I've heard other stories with the same subject with a different photographer where things really clicked and it worked, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think either of us would say that. I mean, Helmut Newton's sort of genius aside, I don't think any of the photographs that are in this article by Helmut Newton are very good.
I don't think that they're very interesting either. But
I do love the two shots that are the Norman Seeff shots.
Yeah. So there, it just goes to show that it's not always about like, oh, we're just going to get this super famous fancy guy or gal. You know what I mean? Like that mm-hmm. that doesn't guarantee a certain level of results. And even when we see, if you look at Helmut, this also shows that like people will go look at, say, we'll use Helmut Newton because he's in this thing. They'll look at Helmut Newton's portfolio and they'll say, oh my God, look at, they're all amazing. Well, he also didn't include the stuff like this that he shot that didn't work out.
Right.
Because this will always happen as well. You know, like this is just reality of how the world works. You know, there's a certain amount of stuff that works or doesn't work. I also think it's funny that in the end, to get even the Seeff pictures to work, basically they got them drunk and high, you know, to make the band like get together.
I don't think they had to get them drunk.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But that's what ended up happening in order for it to click, you know, which is just kind of funny to me. It's good stuff, and it's a fun read if you're into sort of the history of, well, A, Van Halen, or B, photography in general. It's a pretty interesting little article.
I may or may not have told this story, and I apologize if I did, but for those of you who haven't heard it, Van Halen used to play in my grandmother's backyard.
Yeah, I remember you telling that story.
Yeah, my uncles grew up with Eddie and Alex, and before they were Van Halen, they were a backyard band in Arcadia and Temple City and here in Southern California. And I didn't believe it. And they said, you know, they asked my grandmother in front of me, do you remember Eddie? And, oh yeah. I remember them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice boys.
Kids.
Yeah. Yeah, they were nice boys, you know, and years later, I was working at a post-production facility in LA, and, one of the videos that was being worked on was Right Now.
Which is one of their better, that's a great video. It's a great song. It's fun.
It's a great song. So, you know, they were all there and they were the coolest guys. I mean, Eddie shows up in this Lamborghini assault vehicle, right? This like basically like Lamborghini's version of a Hummer type thing.
Those are so ugly though, weren't they?
Yeah. And he's got like the ripped jeans and a long coat on. He's just like, hey, what's up? And you know, Alex shows up in his Corvette, and they, you know, they're drinking Heineken and just hanging out and eating pizza and having a great time. And they seemed like just really cool guys. You know, so what must have gone on? What must the dynamic have been to see the sort of scowling versions of themselves that we see here in these photographs?
Yeah. How bad must Dave have been?
on some level, yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, how much tension? Mm. Because it seems like they're just cool guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And they seem pretty laid back. So you'd have to probably push them pretty far to get them to sort of lose their minds.
Seems like it, right? I mean, you know, we're way on the outside, but
yeah, what do we know?
I had to go to Eddie's house one time to deliver some tapes, and
tape.
Yeah, so you go down Ventura, you get to Laurel Canyon, or is it Cold? Maybe it might have been Coldwater Canyon. Anyway, so you go up, and his his estate, you know, you kind of go down the driveway to his estate and all the garages are open and there's like, you know, there are cars everywhere. And it just like, what a life, right?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
You work hard, but you play hard too.
Sure.
But, you know, all that to say, the 2 times that I met any of them, they were very nice.
Yeah, they seem like nice guys. I'd love to meet them at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eddie used to have this 55 Chevrolet, like a burgundy 55 Chevrolet that was just, you know, pristine condition. And the license plate was Wolf VH. Yeah. It's great.
Howl.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to put a link to this 45-minute talk by Norman Seeff that's up on Vimeo.
Okay. Can we talk about this for a little bit?
Sure.
I love this. In fact, to the point where I've got this long email to Norman Seeff that I need to take another pass at. But
well, why don't we give people a chance to read it and then or watch it, and then we'll discuss it a little more next week. Is that fair?
That's okay. That's good. That's a good idea. And it couldn't have come at a better time for all the things that I have been uncovering and peeling the scabs off of and that kind of thing. There are some things in here that are not just apropos for photographers, but for people, for relating to people, for exchanging love and energy and respect and all of these things that make humanity kind of sublime. So please watch it.
Do you think that's true of all the things we talk about? Ultimately, that's what we're talking about, isn't it?
I hope it's a
communicating with other humans.
I hope so.
Yeah. It certainly is for me. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about a sponsor because we got a lot to cover and we got a couple sponsors today. Let's talk about lynda.com. Give me a song.
Lynda. Dun, 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 Lynda. I don't know. I got nothing. It's Panama. I don't know.
Yeah, I got you. Hey guys, it's already February. It's not February. It's March.
It's not February. Where have you been?
I got to change this read.
It's March.
It's already March. And what are you waiting for? You got to go. It's going to be warm out soon. You're going to want to know how to do stuff. So invest in yourself.
It's not
going to
be warm where you live, man.
It will be soon. I swear.
Ever. It's never going to be warm again.
Better be by June. invest in yourself this year and start learning something new at lynda.com with a free 10-day trial. Lynda.com is used by millions of people around the world and has over 3,000 courses on topics like web development, photography, visual design, business. You got to learn how to run your photography business if you want it to be a business, as well as software training like Excel, WordPress, and Photoshop. All of their courses are taught by experts. New courses are added to the site every single week. And whether you want to set new financial goals, find work-life balance, invest in your new hobby, ask your boss for a raise, Jeffrey, you still got to work. You got to work on that.
Is there a video for asking my boss for a raise?
I think that there is, and I think you should. I wonder if they have a special one for people who are self-employed.
Convince myself that I'm worth more.
Yeah. Find a new job or improve upon your current job skills in 2015. Lynda.com has something for everyone. So listen, people, sign up for a free 10-day trial today by visiting lynda.com/OTP. That's lynda.com/OTP. And you'll get unlimited access to every course on lynda.com. You'll get access to view tutorials on tablets and the iPhone and your Android mobile devices. You get access to all the new courses they add during the 10 days that you are a trial member. You got to go check out Foundations of Photography, Exposure Composition. We got the David Hobby Traveling Photographer series, which sounds like a lot of fun. Can't go wrong with David Hobby. A little strobist action, Jeffrey.
But then I'd have to travel.
Yeah.
I don't travel a lot. I do some.
Yeah. The Practicing Photographer. So go check it out. Go invest in yourself today and sign up for a free 10-day trial at lynda.com. Seriously, guys, 10 days. It's free. Go try it. All you people who, you know, write in and say, I want to learn how to use Photoshop better. I want to learn how to do this.
Yeah. Don't ask Bill. He doesn't.
Don't ask me.
Jeez.
Go ask Lynda. Free 10-day trial at lynda.com, lynda.com/OTP. Go ahead. Challenge you to learn something new in 2015. So thank you very much to lynda.com for supporting Untaken Pictures and the 5x5 Network. And okay, Let's, what else we got on this thing here? We got lots of stuff. I moved the other thing to next week because it's a bigger discussion and we'll have more time for next week.
And we'll, the mammoth thing. Yeah. Okay. That's good, by the way. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. It is good, right?
Yeah.
Last week, I guess it was, what day of the week was it? It was, I don't know. Let's say it was Thursday. No, it was Friday, actually. It was Friday because it was busy. I had to go pick up Conrad at work after work, and she was running late. So I was in Midtown with nothing to do, and I have a MoMA membership, and there's a show that I've been meaning to go to that's over there. And the show was really, really great. And I came home and went to the website, and the website's really fascinating. And that's part of what I wanted to bring up was this website. I don't know if you've taken a look at this.
Yeah, I did. It's interesting. It's put together pretty well.
Like a bunch of different ways. It's a little obtuse to how to get to certain things, certain times. But if you're looking for, you could theoretically go see this website, go read about all of the things they did, and see how this artist connects to other artists of the time, which is kind of what's fascinating about it. Like they have all these connections and timelines between different artists and their work and their like places on the world's map and the kind of work they were doing. There's one picture in here, Jeffrey. I'm going to send it to you here. And I saw this. I got to send it to you in Skype. Here.
Okay.
You get this Metropolis by Paul Citron.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Tell me that doesn't look like the Shohei Nishino.
Yeah.
Right. This was 1923. Paul Citron was, how do you pronounce the guy's name? Shohei Nishino? Nishino?
Shohei Nishino?
Is that what we decided on? Who we used for Photographer of the Week, a couple months ago, who did these crazy collages of cities where he sort of built the cities out of close-up pictures.
Yeah.
There you go. He built the city out of the shape of the city out of pictures that he took of buildings all around the city in this sort of collage format. And it's certainly looks inspired by this picture that Paul Citron did in 1923, which is kind of cool.
Can you include,
I can link straight to this. Yeah.
Yeah. Link straight to that. And then I just pasted in Shohei Nishino's.
Yeah. I'll link to all three.
So you guys can look at both of them and, you know, it just kind of reinforces that, you know, we're all just kind of pushing things around trying to reinterpret and reinvent and get inspired.
That's the thing. Shohei's stuff is a step beyond this, but at the same time, he's certainly inspired by this. If he wasn't, mm-hmm. I'd rappel off the side of my building if he hadn't seen that before, you know. But there's some really,
this is really great.
There's some really great stuff in this whole site, though. Like the Blossfeldt stuff of all those crazy leaves and little, like.
Well, and you can look by area. Like you can click on Moscow, for example, and it will show you, you know, all of the sort of Moscow photographers, or click on Mexico City and how they're connected to not only other photographers, but where they showed and what kind of, this is really cool. It's really well done.
Yeah. It's really neat. And in some ways, look, you know, I live here, I get to go over there, like I'm on my way to go pick up, but most people aren't and can't, right? You know, or there's a show at LACMA that I can't get to because I'm not in LA that you could go to easily, you know?
Right.
The fact that they are now doing websites like this that are more than just, oh, here's a handful of pictures from the 350 pictures that are in the show.
Right.
You know, this is like, here are all of them. Here are the techniques that were used. You know, there's all kinds of crazy stuff in here talking about, I don't know if you've noticed this, there's a whole visualization on technique talking about whether they used contact prints or developed out of paper or whether they retouched, or it's fascinating. Like the levels of stuff.
Is there a companion book?
There is
that goes
a companion
along with
book
this?
And I'll put a link. I'll find it on Amazon and, it's,
here, the fact, book. There it is.
Yeah. It's cheaper of course on Amazon.
Object photo.
How much do they charge on there? Is that on the website? It's $47 on Amazon.
It doesn't look like there's a link to buy it.
Yeah. All right. Well, then I'll put a link to the Amazon.
Oh, it links to the MoMA store. Wow, it's not really a very good thing.
I'm not surprised. Pretty cool book.
Yeah, $75 at the MoMA store.
Yeah, yeah.
How much is it on Amazon?
$47.
Wah, wah.
Yeah. So anyway, if you are in the New York area and have time, I think this is up for another month or two. It's called Modern Photographs, 1909 to 1947. And there's some really amazing stuff in there. So go check it out. But even if you can't, go check out this website because it's fascinating.
It's a terrific visualization of data that's otherwise kind of hard to visualize.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they did a really good job. So anyway, something different.
Kind of reminds me of that. Remember that show Connections? It used to be on PBS.
You're really going to talk to me about Connections? Yeah. That's like my favorite thing of all time.
All right.
James Burke and I are buds.
Well, there you go then. See?
I will tell you, when I met him, I think that I could not have been more excited to meet anyone in the world. Like I was so excited that I was actually shaking to meet him. I was so excited. And there he was. Oh, that was exciting. Anyway. Okay. Wow. Speaking of photo books.
Bill, you need a minute?
James Burke is like the coolest person. James Burke if it came down to meet James Burke or meet Neil Armstrong while he was still alive, I think I would go with James Burke.
Wow.
Yeah, I think James Burke was the best.
It's like that.
Didn't get to meet Armstrong.
All right.
Anyway, if you haven't seen Connections, people, stop right now and go watch it because it's amazing.
No, don't stop right now. No.
All right, after the show,
let
go watch
it. With a dial. Don't stop.
somebody sent in this photo books article. What do you think?
Well,
this is a Financial Times article talking about how photo books are booming in the digital age, quote unquote.
They are booming.
I don't know if anybody's making any money on them, though.
Well, that's the thing, is it still comes down to, what are you getting out of it?
Right.
I remember talking to Christina Demidel at Photo Paris Photo.
Right, right.
She had her first book, Afronauts.
Right.
That's what it was called.
Yep.
And it sold out the initial run. It was like, $100 or whatever it was per copy.
Yep.
Okay. So she made $100 a copy on it, but it's, if you can find it on the secondary market, they're going for like $1,200, $1,500. Yep. And she's not getting any of that money.
Right. But her book is a standout seller.
Seems to be.
Yeah. I will tell you, I've been to a number of openings and book signings, kind of like, I have this new book out, where I've talked to people in the know off the record and they'd be like, yeah, that person totally paid for that book themselves. Like it's a vanity project.
Right. And that happens a lot. It's a self-promotion project, right?
Yep.
And there are so many of them that are coming out now. I have a hard time keeping up. I mean,
I can't afford to keep up.
Yeah. Yeah. if you are into photo books, there are a couple of really great sites. Photoeditor.com is great for keeping up. And, even better than that, I think is Flack Photo.
Which I put both links in the show notes.
Yeah. What Andy Adams is doing over there with Flack is.
What do you think about that? There's a link on the A Photo Editor. One of the first things on there is a guy. Or it was. Did he put something up above it? Is a guy talking about basically printing a newspaper and sending it out as a promo. Do you think that is that kind of thing interesting to you? The whole, like, I'm going to make a little zine of my work?
I think it is. And look, I think people on the group are starting to embrace this. I mean, I you can get postcards from Chris Matheson. You yep. can get hard copy newsletters from Holger. You yep. can get, there are a number of people, and I'm sorry, I'm not mentioning everyone, but the idea of swapping objects is so cool, you guys. And I would like us to keep doing that. I have gotten just last week, I got two prints, one from Jerome and one from David Gardner.
Yep.
It is so, I don't even have the words to say how cool it is to get something like this in the mail and open it up and it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if people are self-publishing or self-printing, I have an idea around my dumpsters project.
Okay.
That instead, I was going to do just like a photo book, but I don't think I am. I think what I want to do is, and maybe this is going to change, but I think I want to do a
Let me ask. You're going to print out all the pictures of a dumpster, crumple them up, and put them inside a dumpster as a meta performance art piece.
No, but that's close. I'm not going to crumple them all up, but I do want to do little handmade boxes that I texture very similar to the way I texture my paintings and make some sort of art box that they go into.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
You know what else would be a fun idea is to get some of them and do them as paste ups and put them on dumpsters.
Like as like,
yeah, go all Banksy.
Sticker graffiti Banks. Yeah. I like that.
Right.
Like, so it's like a photo of a dumpster on a dumpster.
Yeah. Meta. That's actually a neat idea.
It's actually a really cool idea, Wadman.
And then you can shoot the picture of the dumpster on the dumpster.
Yes.
Oh. And that is your work.
Oh.
You took it one step further.
Hold on. Hold on, Wadman. I'm taking notes, people.
I'm just saying, write it down.
I am.
Don't let it go.
Because if you don't write it down, you'll never remember it.
You know, I got a chalkboard. Conrad bought me a chalkboard for my birthday, and it's this like nice chalkboard with a nice frame, like wooden frame around the edges. But the chalkboard itself, apparently, it's really hard to buy large like sort of slate chalkboards anymore. What you get is sort of this plastic coating chalkboards. Right. Do you know what I'm talking about?
They're kind of melamine with chalkboard finish on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the problem. I wrote on it and I erased it, and there's scratches where the chalk. It actually scratched the surface, the chalk.
Yeah, yeah.
What a piece of crap.
Because you know what you need? A whiteboard. What?
I hate whiteboards.
Whiteboards are the thing, man.
No, I'm anti-whiteboard.
Ugh.
I have whiteboards. I don't like the big white thing with dark writing on it. I prefer the inverse when I'm writing stuff on the wall. Like, I want a chalkboard because I like the feel of chalk. We have whiteboards in the house too, but I wanted a chalkboard for here. But it's hard to find like a 20-by-30-inch chalkboard. It's like impossible.
You know what you do?
You
make it. You made that goofy corner. Make yourself a chalkboard.
Yeah, but where do I buy a big chunk of slate to make?
You
the
don't
chalkboard
use
with?
Slate. You get a piece of plywood and you go to Home
chalkboard
Depot
paint.
And you prime it, and then you use chalkboard paint.
You know what? That's a good idea. I'm going to replace the back of this with chalkboard paint.
Yeah.
In fact, I could probably just do chalkboard paint over the top of this.
I would sand it lightly.
Yeah.
Just to give it something to stick to. But yeah,
but that would work. All right, maybe I'll do that.
Look at us making stuff.
Wow, we're like helping each other out like this.
We're like doing our thing.
Hey, so I saw this on Ars Technica, a quick little thing.
I don't get this. I don't get why this is interesting in the least. So explain this to me.
Well, I just okay. So this woman named Runa Sandvik, whatever. She's a writer for Ars Technica, and apparently she's from, where's she from? Like Denmark or something, right? So every time she comes into the country, when you come into the country, they take a picture and they do your fingerprints when you're a foreign national nowadays at the passport thing. But apparently all of these pictures are kept, and you can request them from the Department of Homeland Security to say, I'd like a copy of every picture that you have of me from X, whatever it is. And they'll actually send them to you. Isn't that weird? That, like, I just think it's, well, first of all, I think it's interesting that the Homeland Security Department, it's interesting that they'll actually give them to you, to me. And I also think it's interesting that there are all these pictures of us in all these databases all over the place, which is obvious, but like, it's interesting when you actually see it in a cube. This doesn't fascinate you at all.
Not at all.
See, I think this was pretty cool. I'll put a link in the show notes. And anyway, she wrote them, and they sent her back this grid of, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 40 pictures from the last 4 years of her going in and out of the country. And it's kind of like they're kind of like little portraits of her. I thought that was kind of neat.
Ugh.
Apparently you're not interested, so I'll put it in the show notes. Everyone else can take a look.
Ugh.
But I know what you are interested in, advertising for Apple. So go ahead.
I got to keep the stock up, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm working on my retirement here. Come on. Apple put up this gallery. It's called Shot on iPhone 6.
Yep.
And they're just, you know, go look at it if you're interested.
Where
if you're not,
don't.
Where do
they get these from?
I don't know. I don't know if they put out a call for requests, you know, like an RFP type thing.
Or do they just go look and then say, contact the people and say.
Yeah. Is it, have they found these things on some other service? I don't know how that's a good question. But there are some really beautiful things. You and I were talking a little bit before the show, how, you know, saying that, you know, some of these are really sharp and clear and I would agree with you. A lot of the photos that I take aren't this, but I'm using an iPhone 5. And are you using a 5 or a 5S?
I'm using a 5, but I had a 5S for a little while that I was borrowing from Weathersby when my 5 was busted.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe, I didn't notice I have, the camera being that much better. I've heard the 6 has a good camera, but like it's the same resolution, similar lens system. Like, is it that much better? Is it like quantum leap better? Because it just seems odd to me. Because yeah, if I took, then again, these are what, 1,000 pixels, 1,200 pixels on this page. So we're not seeing them at 100%, which is always the thing with phone pictures. Like a lot of them mm-hmm. look amazing online and they make a decent print, you know, but if you get up close to them, you go, oh yeah, okay, I could see where it's still a phone pic, you know?
Well, there is some fantastic work up here.
There is.
Whether or not you are a shooter of phone photography or iPhonography or iPhoneography,
when you're crowdsourcing 200 million people, you should be able to find some good photos.
Right.
I mean, let's put it into perspective here, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's smart of them. They're taking out ads in newspaper, like magazine ads and billboards and stuff, using pictures shot on phones as like an advertising campaign for how great it is to take pictures with your phone, which is really smart because there's a lot of good work and.
Well, and the phone is the bulk of their revenue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. The bulk of that $180 billion in cash reserves that they have now came from the phone.
Their phone. Yeah. It's like 70% of their revenue, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's both amazing and terrifying, you know, in equal measure.
Right.
Yeah, totally cool. We'll put a link in the show notes.
You got something else? No, keep what? Talk amongst yourself for a minute because I didn't. Oh, we need an assignment for the week.
Oh, sure. Now you got to come up with an assignment.
Look at this. We're freestyling, yo.
Well, would you like to talk about, should I talk about Squarespace while we have a minute?
I got to tell you, I did have a song. It was horribly white and, but it was a rap song for.
Are you telling me it had no stank on it?
It had no stank on it. But I did come up with a little something for Skill Feed that maybe I'll bust out next time.
Okay. All right. I will talk about Squarespace because I've been using Squarespace a lot the last week or two. Actually, I've been using Squarespace a lot more lately because I've been posting a lot on my blog and
yeah, you
and
have.
Playing
We're
going
to get to that too because I got something for you on that.
Okay. I'll look forward to that.
come on. Oh, do you see what listeners? Do you see what he? Do you see how he treats me? Do you see what I have to deal with?
I will tell you, man. The more I use Squarespace, the more amazed I am at the skill of the people who are coding this thing in the back end. It's pretty amazing. It's
yes.
The fact that like 5 years ago, if you told me this is what website making a website would be like today, I don't think I would believe it. You know, it's pretty damn seamless now. It's like easy. You know. So look, we're talking about Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful blog, website, or online store for you and your ideas. You guys know all this stuff. Do I really? I guess I got to spell it out. You know, they've got some
Q U A.
Yeah, it's look, it's simple, powerful, beautiful. Of course, they've got all the beautiful templates and big wide open white space for your content to look great in and, you know, build your portfolio. They got 24/7 support, online chat and email. Seriously, if you're using Flickr as your main website, come on, go to Squarespace, get a site, put your stuff up there, you know, like a gentleman, at only like $8 a month. I stole that. I think
is that a Squarespace site? It looks rubbish.
I think I stole that from Merlin. He says that, you know, like a gentleman. Only $8 a month and you get a free domain if you buy Squarespace for a year. I started a new site the other day and got my free domain for just $8 a month when I bought it for a year. They have responsive design, so your website scales to look great on any device. You go down to your phone, still looks great. go up to your iPad, still looks great. Your big website, your Retina screen where you need your images to be double res, as long as you put up a big enough image of Squarespace, people will see it looking great.
Yeah, they've got commerce. Bitch about people stealing it and using it.
Well, yeah. They've got commerce, great commerce, e-commerce. So every website comes with a free online store, which is easily, really easy to set up using Stripe to get things connected. By far the easiest online store system I've ever used.
I dig Stripe, by the way.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And the money ends up in your account like the next day, like at midnight.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Cover pages, which is pretty cool, which is a feature that allows you to set up a beautiful one-page online presence in minutes. So you just need to get your contact info out and whatever. You can put up a page. Or let's say you're working on your site, but you want one page just so people, you know how to contact you or whatever while you're working on it. Sort of a under construction page. Remember under construction pages with the little GIFs?
Yeah. Coming soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember blinking text?
Yeah. Does blink still work as a tag?
I hope not. I hope they deprecated that because it was so annoying.
Wow, blink. We noticed something the past week is like people putting music that plays when you open a website.
Stop it. Stop it,
God,
people.
It's such a terrible
idea. If you've got
idea.
Music that's playing, auto-playing on your site or videos that auto-play on
your
site,
turn it off.
Go slap yourself and take it down.
So look, go start a trial with no credit card required. Start building your website with Squarespace today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code OTP to get 10% off your first purchase and to show your support for On Taking Pictures. So thank you so much to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On Taking Pictures. Squarespace, build it beautiful. I am a real convert to Squarespace. They're great. And, I doubt that I will ever go back to making my own website and spending the time to do that because Squarespace does such a great
job. Thank God, because I'm tired of answering your CSS questions.
Oh, please.
See what I did there? See what I did there? Reversal!
all right, so did I give you enough time?
What do you think of morning light?
I think that's great for people who get up in the morning. But yeah, sure.
Or people.
How will you tell morning light from golden hour in the evening?
Okay. You know what? Good point. Golden hour. There.
There
you go. Boom.
All right.
Okay.
Can we say how good of a job people have done on this week's assignment?
Jesus, people. Yeah. I don't know what has been in the water, but motion blur has been, you guys have been.
Apparently it's in the water all over the world.
Yeah. I mean, there are some, we can't even go over all of them, but
Kevin Bjork shot of that guy with the phone, the blur one, the street shot.
Oh,
great.
Yeah. That's great.
Fusero's picture of the guy in the kayak.
Yep. Bob Campbell.
Bob Campbell is playing the motion thing. Yeah.
Yep. Jesus. Robert Barron. See, now Robert didn't think his photo went far enough. He called it a failed attempt, but I quite like it.
Wait, which one's Robert Barron?
Walking across the bridge.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Millie, love that. That's abstract and cool.
Yeah.
Gardner. You get the great shots of the birds, David. I love those. Craig B., reaching back a little. Film shooter, 1979, pulling that out of the archives.
Gotta do it.
Now go shoot another one, mister. Let's see, Tanya. The one of the spinning, the weaving.
Spinning
weaving?
Wheel.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. That's good. Bill Memes. Bill, I love this shot. Sort of multiple exposure, layered, blurred. There's all kinds of stuff going on, and it's very austere and minimal, and I love the intense color of the edges of the roads. Terrific job. There are so many. Waller?
Here's the thing, Jeffrey. I don't think that they're going to be able to top it for next week, though.
Well, don't let that stop you, people. I believe in you, even if Bill doesn't. Hashtag Team Jeffrey. Boom.
Hashtag Golden Hour is the assignment for next week. That's a good one, Golden Hour.
Golden Hour.
Yeah. Look, Photographer of the Week.
Wait a minute.
Wait, we got something to say?
Okay. I love your composite that you put up, the diner hit. Okay,
talk about that. Okay,
I'm gonna preface it with I love the concept.
Okay.
My big gripe with it.
Okay.
Have you ever fired a weapon in your life?
I looked at...
Okay, just have you ever fired a weapon?
Yes, I have. In fact, I fired one of those.
Okay, so here's my problem with this. First of all, if you in fact were able to catch this moment with the bullet just escaping the gun.
Yep.
A, there would be recoil.
Yeah, not yet.
Yes, actually. There would be.
I watched high speed photo video of the, yes, there will be, but not at this point. The bullet that far out of the gun, the top thing has not slid back yet.
I disagree with you. Also,
well, then we'll go get some video.
The muzzle flash looks more like a creme brulee burner than what it.
Okay, well, it is muzzle flash from a similar gun.
Okay.
Okay, but aside that, what else?
Really, the gun is the big thing. There would be light on the back of his head. There would be more light on the front of his hand. That's the big gripe I have.
Okay.
With
all right. Well, I can play with that.
So what, okay, let me look at the whole thing. Because what is, it's hard, because it's so small, even. Okay, so the guy.
It's definitely one that's going to need to be big.
Yeah, yeah, because there's a lot going on. Okay,
well, there is a lot going on.
The guy that we can assume is getting killed, what is he supposed to be looking at? Is he supposed to be looking at the fork?
My idea initially was that he was like that she's showing a little leg. So there's that, but there's also the fork maybe to get him to look over in that direction in the first place, you know, and then he catches her legs and misses the whole thing. It's all a distraction, right? That's the idea.
Cause it looks like his gaze, he's looking about two tiles to the left of the fork.
Yeah. I mean, my idea was that he was kind of going down towards that stuff. It was sort of in the motion of the whole thing. But so the whole idea was that my initial idea was that this was all a setup, right? That like Nick over on the left is in on it. Ron firing is in on it. Yuri is in on it.
Who's Yuri? Is she the one in the dress?
Yeah. The one in the dress.
Okay.
And then the waitress sees it about to happen and is running towards it. Obviously.
So
She's the only one not in on it. And she's obviously seeing it far too late.
See, I love this conceptually. I love the slight sort of Deutsch tilt kind of thing that you've got going.
Yeah. The tilt was added after the fact. I go back and forth of whether or not I like the tilt.
I like it because it's for the viewer.
Off kilter.
Yeah, it's gives us a little uneasiness.
Yep.
My big thing is the gun.
Okay.
And that there's I want to see more of a sense of motion. Everyone looks too still.
Well, yeah.
You
understand it's a photograph, right?
Yeah, but you're Mr. Science. You're like Mr. Science and Detail Guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So these seem like they don't seem like omissions. They seem like, I don't know how to describe it.
Okay.
But I conceptually, I love it.
You know, it's pretty funny. I don't know if you've noticed, but above Yuri's head, there's a photograph in a frame up in the back.
I can't see quite what that is because I can't zoom in.
That's the diner shot with Heather and Nick.
Oh, okay. The previous one. Oh, I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because that was taken at the counter, which is like where I'm standing as the photographer.
Okay. So if we flip around, this is the counter from the other shot.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's cute. That's
just kind of funny. Yeah. Look, you know what it is? Here's the thing. It's a big idea. Getting 5+ X people in one place at one time to do something. It's like, is it exactly what I wanted? No.
Okay, but
am I happy with it? Yes.
This is what you do.
What?
Getting
do I do?
People together to make photographs. That's your job.
Yes.
So don't dismiss it or excuse it away.
No. I'm not excusing
your job.
It away. Yes, but I also don't have a budget for this kind of thing and 12 people to be doing a lot of work for me. You know, this is me doing it myself and I have X amount of seconds. So I'm not excusing it away. I'm just saying that like it is a big process. And when you're doing pre-production, when you're doing a shoot in X amount of time, you're doing piles and piles of post-production. Can you guarantee that it's going to be exactly what you had in mind at the beginning? No. I'm very happy with the photo, though. I mean, in the end, it's like it's fine. It's, you know, it's an experiment. It's a fun thing. It's funny because originally this was actually a different picture, which I think I might actually take another time as a little test.
Where is the light? Where is the flare coming from?
I was thinking headlights outside.
Headlights.
There's
outside.
Windows. There's windows on that whole wall.
Okay, that it feels a little high then. If it's on the street,
yeah.
Yeah, and I love the cool sort of greeny blue that you've got going on against the orange of the wall.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like. It's just little details is where I kind of go, what happened here?
All right.
I still love you. Don't worry.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion, Jeffrey.
Well, I know.
I'm pretty happy with it overall. You know what else is fun about it is that it's you see, read the thing where it's actually 50 megapixel file that I got out of it.
So I
stitched together, I think, 4 or 5 pictures. Like I had them all in place and we went across the whole thing. And
so
then Photoshop stitched it.
Your tripod sort of just panning across?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And did you eyeball where you took the next shot, or is this measured out like 20 degrees?
I eyeballed it. Like I, you know, I looked at what was in the first shot and then slid over so that it was still covering, you know? And then the nice thing about that is that like, even in the blog post, there are detail images down the bottom where you can actually like look into the picture more.
Yeah.
Even those are not 100%. So it's like, there is a lot of pixels. So I think I'm going to end up printing a big one just to see how it looks, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's fun. You know, doing these things is very, very complicated, you know.
Sure.
This is definitely juggling, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's fun.
Well done. Well, good job for you for putting stuff up.
Thank you. All right. Should we do Photographer of the Week?
Yeah. A little sadness here. Go ahead.
All right. So, at the beginning of last week, I had a different person in here, and we swapped it out both because we were planning on it and because everyone, interestingly enough, was telling us we should do this. We're going to use
Leonard, a lot of people wrote in.
Leonard Nimoy, Photographer of the Week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad. I watched the Wrath of Khan the other night. By the way, all those movies are on Netflix, if you're not aware of that.
Yes.
Our friend Derek came over and we watched Wrath of Khan the other night. And of course there's the you are and shall always be my friend.
Yeah. Know? That wrecks me.
And
every
you're
time.
Just like, oh,
I sob every time I watch that.
Yeah. That, and it's like doubly so considering, you know,
yeah.
And in
yeah.
some ways, you know, and there's the scene at the end where they're shooting Spock out of the tube,
yeah.
the torpedo. And it's like, so in some ways, all this stuff about Shatner not going to his funeral or whatever, it's like, in some ways, he's had to do that,
right?
You know, in fake as well. You know, like, yeah, I'm sure he's thought about it.
I
kind of
like the way
times.
Shatner handled it, of doing like a Twitter, you know, ask me anything you want about Leonard Nimoy kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I
don't, you know what? And we don't know. Maybe he's so broken up about it he can't even handle being in the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we don't. A lot of people are making assumptions about.
Maybe he wanted it to be about Leonard and thought that if he was there, it would somehow become about him. And it was a respect issue. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. For those of you who aren't aware, Leonard Nimoy was quite a photographer in his lifetime.
I actually saw a show of his. Actually, I saw two shows. One, I think it was in Santa Barbara. And then the other one was at the University of Laverne in one of their galleries.
And which stuff were you looking at?
I think the stuff that I saw, some of the stuff were these hands. There were a few of these hands pieces, which I kind of think are cool.
Yep.
And then some of his color work down below. And then there were some that aren't represented here. But, it didn't strike me as like a musician who wants to try acting.
Okay.
You know, or vice versa, or an actor who wants to get a band together. It seems like this was a real a real passion for him, and it's something that he put an extraordinary amount of time into honing and learning and really taking seriously. Not just a hobby. Like this is something that, you know, almost like Bryan Adams, who we've talked about several times.
Sure.
Where this could easily have been an alternate career for him if he decided to go that way.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, his work is certainly not commercial photography in the traditional sense, right? You know, what he's doing is certainly art photography.
Sure.
You know, he also had the freedom because of success in the other thing to indulge, you know, his passion for this, which is really great. I mean, some of these pictures on the BuzzFeed link, which I'll put a few links in the show notes. I kind of like in the 70s, that shot of the old woman and the guy like on the bridge.
Let me go down. Oh, where she's kind of looking to the left.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of walking into the light. That's a great shot.
Yeah. These hands ones in the 80s to the early 2000s, are these the ones you're talking about that you saw?
Some of them, yeah.
Like multiple exposure stuff and some weird stuff in here. Mm-hmm. But he definitely was experimental.
Yeah, you know? Reminds me of some of the stuff like Bernice Abbott would do.
Yeah,
you know?
That kind of thing. Yep, yeah. And of course, he was known in the late 2000s, there was this series of called Full Body, where he had this this burlesque group called the Fat Bottom Review. They were a number of overweight women that he shot nudes of.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the recreation of is that a Helmut Newton shot?
I think it's a Herb Ritz models? Shot.
Herb Ritz?
I think so. Isn't it?
I don't know. We'll have to look that up.
Here, you keep talking. I'll look this.
Okay. There's a famous diptych of these four beautiful, tall, leggy models clothed walking towards the camera. And then there's the same shot with them nude next to it. And he recreated that with these heavy women. And it's pretty fun. It's fascinating. You know, it's
yeah,
like
here it is.
A take off that.
Who there you it? Go. Yeah. It's yeah.
What is Herbert's?
So it's
oh no, that's not the shot I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. This one is here. Stephanie Seymour, Cindy Crawford, looks like Christy Turlington, Naomi Campbell, and who's the fourth one or the fifth one rather? Elena, I think. What's her name? She was married to John Mellencamp for a while.
Had to get the book. Had to get the book.
All right, I don't remember her name, guys.
It's Helmut Newton. 296. There's this really great book for those of you who aren't aware of it called Photo Icons, the Story Behind the Pictures. It's a Taschen book. We use this. I think we talked about it once, like way, you know, years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get it, it's really great because it's
this is okay. I'm talking. Okay. We were talking about
the
same
thing. You know
what
I'm talking about?
Yeah. I'm talking about Full Body, the one where they're sitting down. You're talking about the one where they're all standing.
Oh, he did both of them.
Yeah. The one where they're all sitting down.
Oh, you're right.
Ritz.
All right. I was talking about the
standing one
next.
Is Helmut Newton. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. So we were both right.
Yay.
Yeah. So he recreated a bunch of really famous photographs and paintings, I think, with these women.
Yeah.
And pretty interesting stuff.
He kind of spanned a lot of different types of work, and again, I think his approach to it wasn't as a lark. It didn't seem to be as a lark. It didn't seem to be as, you know, I've got money, so I'm going to do this. It seemed like he really studied and took it seriously and really tried to do some interesting work.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well done, Leonard.
Yeah, he was. I like just the idea of people doing different things, even if that's not what they do. Right. You know, like, you take pictures, you do your painting stuff.
Feeds the stream.
That's exactly it. You know, like I whatever it was last summer, or the summer before, I made all those little short films, even though I'm not a short filmmaker, just cause it was just something different to do, you know, that was related, but unrelated, you know?
Sure.
There's something fun in, you know, that should be one of our assignments 1 week.
What's that?
Having people do something other than photography and put it up.
Like shoot a photograph of some other thing that you've made.
Yeah. If you sculpted or painted or drew, or if you want to make a movie or you want to make a song, you know what I mean? Like do something else to like get out of it.
But we'll talk about that.
We'll get off. We'll talk about that offline. But that would be a fun thing to sort of sometimes photographers in general, and this is a conversation for the large topic next week.
Yep.
We just get lost in these minutia, these questions that don't really matter to the majority of people out there. And yes, they matter to us because we're photographers, but we also have to be careful that we don't get to the point where we lose touch.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's the interesting part. But anyway, it's good stuff. Anything else you want to say about Leonard Nimoy?
No, I never got a chance to meet him. I would like to have. He seemed like a very kind person.
He was on my wish list, and I didn't get to meet him. By the way, the Super Fantastic Nerd Hour, Ali and Conrad did a Remembering Leonard Nimoy episode. So if anybody wants to listen to some of that, I'll put a link in the show notes because it's, you know, some people are into that kind of thing.
Sure.
And I think that's it for today. You got anything else?
I don't think I have anything else. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And again, thank you for all of your notes and your emails. And it's good stuff, and it helps. And you know, if we can help each other, then let's do that.
Yeah.
You know, we're humans first, after all.
Some of us are.
Yeah, yeah. Looking at you, Baleward. Oh, see, you tied it back into the beginning. I'm assuming that's what you're doing.
Circuitous right there. That's right.
That's making circles, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. See ya.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Oh, wait.
What?
Podcast at ontakingpictures.com. Oh, right. Or you can leave a voicemail like Tom from Michigan, 347-687-9411. Tom, are you still okay?
Yeah.
Are you still okay? Is it still 30 below there?
Probably.
Well, you know, it's probably 30 below where Millie lives.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Millie, you have got to be getting tired of the snow, my dear.
I think we all are. It's supposed to snow this afternoon here.
Yay!
Bill Wadman on Twitter, Jeffrey Sidoris on Twitter. Yeah, suck it. All right.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Say, will